and a wonderful good afternoon to all of our listeners today. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Friday, March 10th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, we did have the jobs report. We'll talk about that a little bit after I do the market report. So gold today had some pressure early on, tried to recover, recovered slightly, but I wouldn't write home about it. But
$3.20 for a day, or what it is, $3 in any case. That's actually $15 a week. That's $750 a year.
Yeah, I know. But $3 when you had a pretty hip after.
No, I know.
You know. So again, I'm taking everything we get. But again, with the jobs report, which I believe is what put pressure on it all week long. We talked about the ADP numbers on the job report on Wednesday, and they were way high. The numbers weren't all that high, and you know, there's reasoning behind it and so forth. So again, I think once we get past the jobs report, you're going to see gold begin to move back up. Now, we have one more thing. We have the rate increase that's coming around the 15th of the month, but then we also have the discussions on the debt ceiling and so forth. So, again, I don't see where this pressure on gold is going to stay for much longer. So we just got to get through these little blips and blurps, and, you know, for whatever reason, it goes down, and it's great buying opportunities. So you have gold up 310 today at 1204.90. Silver's up 7 cents today at 1712. Platinum was up 6 at 944, and palladium was down 1 at $750. The USDX today was down, it was fairly significant, 0.78 at 101.21, and crude oil was down 0.83 at 48.45, way below that 50 level that it's been hovering around for the past couple of weeks. And you see the stock market was up 45 points at 20,903. The NASDAQ was up 22 at 58.61. The S&P was up 7 at 23.72. 10-year yield fell back a little bit, 0.02, back down below the 260 at 2.58. Euro was big today, up strong, 1.13. Certainly outpaced the dollar at 107. And I guess Mario Draghi, I think I got some comments on him today, and you know, he made his little comments today about the about their little stimulus and so forth, and their rate, their inflation rate and so forth. So I think that's why we saw the strength that we did in the euro dollar. So I was looking to see if I still had that info. I was reading it a little earlier. They keep stimulus on track. The European Central Bank thinks that the balance of risk facing the 19-country eurozone has shifted away from its own homegrown and drawn out economic difficulties to the international arena. So after a press briefing today, Mario Draghi, the president, said domestic pressures have been more contained, but that at the same time, geopolitical risks are on the up. He noted Britain's decision to leave the European Union last June as a risk to the eurozone, even though no real economic impact could yet be seen. Political uncertainties abound in the eurozone this year, including the elections, which we've been talking about here, the Netherlands, France, and Germany. He's concerned they don't know how those risks events will reverberate on the economic situation, but if there's any change, they have the stimulus program, they will amp it up. But they think that the appears that the growth, economic growth in the eurozone is beginning to pick up some steam, and of course, inflation has risen to the bank's targets. So there you see the euro being as strong as it was today. But our news here, Al, of course, was the jobs report, and the U.S. created 235,000 jobs. And of course, economists were expecting 190 until Wednesday when the ADP came out and said they wanted, what, 295 or 98 or something like that. The unemployment rate was 4.7%. And the average hourly earnings increased by a healthy 2.8% on an annualized business. Construction led the way, growing by 58,000, the most in a decade, while manufacturing also posted strong gains with 28,000 new jobs. Let's see if there was any other interesting things in there. You know, the big question is, the total of employed Americans surged by 447,000 to 152.5 million, the highest ever. So there really isn't any reason why the Fed shouldn't raise rates to 1% at the next meeting.
It seems virtually certain that they'll do it.
You would think so, because basically no negative signs in this report.
Either that, or maybe Janet Yellen is another advocate of this April Fool thing.
Perhaps.
Maybe a little earlier before. We surprised you.
It'll be before April Fool's. So retail saw a decline of 26,000. Professional and business services was 37,000. Private educational services, 29,000. Healthcare, 27,000. Mining, 8,000. There was some comment about government jobs. You know, there's still, I think this was the first, I don't know if this was the first time that manufacturing overtook the number of jobs government created, but then again, I believe there's a freeze on government positions except for defense. Mr. Trump signed an executive order on freezing new hirees, I believe, back in January when he took office, so not sure how much of an impact that might have had, so... So you had the Dow, and you're going to hear the various reports. Does Mr. Trump get credit for the job growth, or is this, you know, for the previous administration? You can debate it both ways. And so, you know, optimism certainly is higher, I believe, but I'm not so sure that the job gains can be attributed to Mr. Trump yet. Now, if we
one thing about it, though, we talked about it yesterday with the effect Trump has apparently had on the number of illegal aliens that are trying to enter this country. They are allegedly down by about 40% since Trump was elected. Not an office nurse, that, but they're allegedly down about 40% compared to last year. And nothing's happened. We haven't built up a wall. We haven't hired enough people to make a difference. The difference is Trump stood up and he said, hey, we don't want any more illegal aliens in here, where we've had two previous presidents that said completely contrary. They encouraged the illegal aliens. That would be G.W. Bush and Barack Obama. They encouraged illegals to enter this country. And it is evidence, there's not much doubt that that's what's happened here. There's no other explanation for a decline, 40% decline in the number of illegals trying to break into this country and the number being arrested. The same thing may be true relative to the economy, as strange as that sounds. And I wouldn't argue that it's going to last, but just the same, maybe Trump does deserve credit from the perspective he has helped instill a sense of optimism in a lot of people.
Well,
and
I mean,
I don't know that I don't argue that that's enough.
I mean, corporations
you can't live on optimism alone, but maybe you can make a big difference.
I don't believe people are out there in the first month of his administration are out there hiring positions based on optimism.
It's hard to sell, but
you know, it usually takes. You know, corporations. You know, sometimes it takes a long. You know, it.
You know, sometimes they look. They think there's going to be a bunch.
I think
of
a lot of
money
more,
to be made. They jump
a
in.
Lot of it was based really on. And I'm not taking anything away. I'm just, you know, dissecting the report. I'm just saying, yes, it was an extremely warm winter, and you do have a lot of strong construction jobs that were in place, and those people were usually laid off. So I would have to think this time weather did play a little bit of an impact on the increase in jobs reports. That's not to say it's a good thing, bad thing. I'm just stating a fact. that that's probably what had the biggest impact on that. Radio Shack today, bankruptcy puts 1,500 stores at risk. I mean, I have no idea how many stores Radio Shack must have had, because about every 2 years they're closing more and more stores. But they made a voluntary Chapter 11 filing. The company stated it would close 200 stores immediately. General Wireless is evaluating options for another 1,300, the entire balance of the location. If all of them are shuttered, it will be one of the largest mass store closings in recent memory. Based on past employee counts, over 10,000 jobs may be at stake. Some of the stores may stay open. Many are operated as joint locations with Sprint Corp, which uses them as locations to sell wireless services and products. But if all locations disappeared, Sprint would lose some of its ability to compete with the wireless operation of T-Mobile US. One set of stores may remain regardless of the Chapter 11 proceedings. Those are 425 owned by independent companies. Radio Shack posted online that Radio Shack stores and websites are currently open for business and serving customers. I don't know why you'd want to buy something if you know a company is filing bankruptcy, unless you can get a really good deal. But Radio Shack is exploring all available options. Also,
what available options could there be? You know, I mean, when you're broke, you're broke. You're filing for bankruptcy.
I can find a buyer.
Closing hundreds of stores, I doubt that they have many available options. They may be exploring four available options, but I don't think they're exploring available options because I'm not sure they have any.
I don't know this the store, but you know, maybe they could piecemeal the stores. Who knows? But another store that is closing, Staples, they're closing another 70 stores as North American sales sink. One of the country's largest store chains wants to be a bit smaller. They reported this yesterday. It was closing another 70 stores amid sharp sales declines in its top market. And they're looking to pivot away from the brick and mortar for their leading office supplies retailer.
We're seeing the same thing. We have an article here from Michael Snyder at the Economic Collapse blog. And the headline is, a third of all U.S. shopping malls are projected to close as space available signs go up all over America. It's being projected that about a third of all shopping malls in the United States will soon close, and the number of distressed retailers is the highest that it's ever been since the last recession. Sears, JCPenney, and Macy's have all announced that they are closing dozens of stores in 2017. Comprehensive list of 19 U.S. retailers that are on the brink of bankruptcy. A retail business bloodbath is going on out there right now. What they're talking about here, this is not necessarily evidence of some sort of an economic, you know, decline, collapse, recession, whatever it may be, but it's not necessarily. This is what's happening is these big brick and mortar stores are being put out of business by the internet. Amazon, outfits like Amazon. And as a result, this is not a small thing. It's not just a question of Sears, JCPenney, and Macy's are going to close some stores. They are anchor stores for shopping centers around the country. And if these anchor stores move out, they're concerned that the shopping malls are going to fold up and they're going to be abandoned. It says about one-third of all the malls in the United States will shut their doors in the coming years. This prediction comes in the wake of Macy's reporting its worst consecutive same-store sales decline since the financial crisis. Macy's and its fellow retailers in American malls are challenged by an oversupply of retail space as customers migrate toward online shopping. As a result, 400 of the country's 3,100 enclosed malls will fail in the upcoming years. 400 out of 1,100 malls going to fold up. Of the 700 that remain, 250 are predicted to thrive. 250 are predicted to thrive, while the remaining 450 will continue to struggle. The point is, are we looking at evidence of a real serious decline in retail sales, or are we looking at evidence of a technological revolution that's essentially rendering the old brick-and-mortar stores obsolete? Are we going to buy our products over the internet from now on, just have them shipped? We won't drive to town. We won't go to the mall. Won't stop off for lunch or whatever. Won't waste money on gasoline or spend money on gasoline. We'll just place an order over the internet, and they'll send us the clothes we want or the shoes or whatever else. Flat screen TV. Is that where we're going? And is it a bad thing? Does it bode for more unemployment, or is it just a kind of technological revolution where we're going to be just fine? What do you think, Baldy?
Well, I think it's all of the above. I mean, if you look at the Staples, their shares were down 5%. They've been shuttering stores, 48 last year, 242 in the prior 2 years. You know, they started out with 1,255 U.S. stores. You know, and it's all about their shares. I buy Staples online. I don't go to Amazon. I go to Staples. Why do I go to Staples online? Because you go into their stupid stores. They've got one. They have one clerk in there. Nobody knows anything. And it's a waste of time, most of your time. And particularly when you end up purchasing usually the same items, the same cartridges, the same ink cartridges, and, you know, so forth for your computers and printers and everything. You know, it's pretty easy just to do online, but I do that with Staples online. So, you know, I think it's, they make more money. I just don't think it's a matter of people not wanting to go into their retail stores. But you go in there, you get less service, you really don't get any deals anymore. They have all kinds of promotions to direct you to their website to purchase from them. And so I think it's a matter of the shareholders. You know, there is upkeep on those stores. There's pensions, there's payroll, there's all other kinds of expenses.
Are you suggesting
and that these multi-corporations, they're not going to give anybody a penny.
You suggesting that these stores are not being driven out of business, but to some extent they're looking forward to closing the stores in order to cut their costs?
Well, I think
other words, they're not going into bankruptcy per se. They're actually just saying, hey, this is a good excuse to get out from under this. Maybe we can dump our pensions. Maybe we can make more money over the internet.
Well, Radio
Shack, down
where
we can run the whole thing with a computer.
Radio Shack is a little different, you know, because, you know, they could never compete with the big stores. You know, it started with Best Buy. It started with the other company that went out of business because they couldn't compete with Best Buy. So, you know, Radio Shack just, you know,
it's just one of many.
But when a company like Staples, yeah, I do believe that. And if you look at Sears, they're going to use their Craftsman sales proceeds for their pensions.
Well, good luck with that. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Maybe a little different. This is a bullion special, an American Gold Eagle special. I have, you get one coin each. You get 1 1-ounce American Gold Eagle. You get 1 half-ounce American Gold Eagle. You get 1/4 ounce and 1/10 ounce. It's 1.85 ounces of gold, and your total package is $2,400, and it includes your shipping costs. So it really is priced nice. The fractional pieces have been priced to bring your overall cost down, and it's a very good deal for you bullion buyers. But you get a 1 ounce, half ounce, quarter ounce, and a 1/10 ounce. Now, the dates will vary. I'm not going to go in trying to match dates. You know, I'd have to charge you more money. So I'm not going to do that. But they're all brilliant, uncirculated, beautiful coins. So you can give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you go to our website at dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And you can listen to these programs live right from the website. But prior to the break, we were talking about the various companies and online selling and so forth, and I'd mentioned that I wanted to talk about Sears, and we all know that they're selling their Craftsman tools, and they're going to use some of the proceeds for their pensions. And during the break, I said to Al, I said, yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, well, you know, how long is that going to work? But, you know, they're going to be getting payments from the Craftsman sales for the next 15 years, and they're going to dedicate some of that money to the pensions. They pledged the $250 million payment and some of the income stream from the annual payments to our pension plans as part of a deal it struck with the Pension Benefit Warranty Corporation, a federal agency that insures private pension benefits. Sears also agreed to a lien on $100 million in real estate assets to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. So my point is, Sears has poured billions of dollars into shoring up its pension plan over the past decade. Sears has been, they've been cutting spending, they've been selling off real estate just to fund its operations. But it seems to me that the pension is really a big part of what they've been trying to protect and to honor. And if they hadn't had to pour billions of dollars into it, would they be in the position that they are today?
You're suggesting that the pensions have helped break Sears.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't doubt that in some instances that's probably true. Unions have become, I don't know that there's a serious, I don't know that there's an employees union that's associated with Sears, but there's other companies where they have to deal with unions, who, and particularly governmental unions, where they have become excessively greedy. They said, oh, we're going to promise you people you can retire early, you can retire twice as much as people have on Social Security, you can live large because you're a government employee. Well, what's going to happen is they're going to cause those governments to go bankrupt, and then where will they get any pension at all? And it's interesting that the pensions are putting enormous pressure on governmental entities, on corporations, and the people who will ultimately depend on those pensions may wind up paying a price for having been so greedy back in the day. when it seemed cool, they could get somebody, they could put enough pressure on the employer, government entity, whatever. They could put enough pressure where they could get outrageous promises, but the promises weren't really going to be made effective for another 20 or 30 years. And therefore, here we are. We're coming up on the moment of the pension, and the question is, will it be paid?
Well, the interesting part about this is they made a deal with the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. They don't release the details. So my question is, what did the pensioners already lose? How was that adjusted also? Because, you know, they're not walking away with – I'll guarantee you they're not walking away with 100% of what they had 10 years ago or 5 years ago.
I agree with that.
But I think one other thing is this. Sears wouldn't continue to pledge money for the plan if there wasn't some sort of reduction in the...
Well, the reduction might be this, insofar as they're pledging profits from Craftsman. Maybe they've already done some studies and they realize that Craftsman, which has been an extraordinary, was a very good brand for throughout my lifetime. Maybe they understand that Craftsman isn't going to continue to prosper in the next decade or two. And if they could get the people said, I'll tell you what, we'll give you the profits from the Craftsman operation. Maybe they know that Craftsman won't have that many profits, and maybe Craftsman's going to die. And the point is, the speculation is, I'm not saying any of this is true, it wouldn't surprise me if it is, but I have no evidence to suggest that it's anything other than speculation. If they could say, you just sign up here and we're going to make Craftsman entirely responsible for your pension. Yeah, I wonder if they'd done projections and they said, look, we know Craftsman's going to fail. And therefore, if we can get these pensioners to agree to keep just solicit Craftsman for their support in their pensions.
Well, yeah, for Craftsman, you know, if Black & Decker ceases the Craftsman tools, yeah, then I would assume, they could ultimately find a way out from paying any of those pension funds. But you can't tell me, you cannot tell me, you will not change my mind that if Sears had continued to make those tools in the United States, that they could not have stayed competitive and profitable. And beginning back, I believe it was, 2010, hand tools were beginning to be made by, like, your ratchets and sockets. They began being produced overseas, mainly in China and some in Taiwan. And you know what? The quality just isn't there. We know the quality that you get from China. We know the quality that you get in Taiwan. And there is a difference. You know, you go to use a tool, and then you have all these other Chinese tools that are made from various companies and so forth being sold at Home Depot for pennies on the dollar. Well, more than that, but for pennies on the dollar. Quality was just thrown out of this country in order to export our inflation and to globalize us. And, how many times have we talked about you don't repair things anymore, you replace things.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, it's just...
Either you repair them or you replace them or you stack them up in the garage.
You don't repair them, you replace them, period.
Okay, then we replace them or we stack them up in the garage.
It's more expensive to repair them.
Yeah, it probably is.
So you just go out and buy things. Warranties are sold.
That's a fact. Why is it too expensive to repair?
Nobody knows how.
Well, it's not just that. You actually have to employ a living human being to take the machine apart. This is to take whatever it is that's broken apart and try to fix it. It's true that not many people understand. It's also true that people cost money. Repairmen cost money. It is probably cheaper to get a new part, a new whatever it is that's broken down on you, buy a new one. It's made by robots someplace, and it'll work, and it'll give you reliable performance for a period of time.
Now, I do believe some of the Craftsman's products could still be made in the U.S., but I'm sure some of them are, but, a bulk of them went overseas. So, again,
see, that's where maybe they made their mistake on this thing. You know, when you allow yourself to be seduced by global free trade. And the idea that we can make products in China that are just as good as the products that we used to manufacture here in the United States, and that the Chinese products will cost a fraction of what the American products were, and we can make far more profit off of the deal. Well, it may be that following that profit incentive, they've not only lost American jobs, they've put people in a place where they're making less money, they can't afford the high quality, they can't afford the high prices that come with high quality, and we are all chasing the lowest price. And that's a dangerous pursuit, because sooner or later you're going to wind up with the lowest price is only on products that really don't work very well. At least that's a strong possibility. We'll watch and see if it really works out that way, but maybe we made a mistake, and I don't know how we could have resisted. How could, people would have said, look, you can't keep making these Craftsman tools, for example, in America, and they cost too much. But we can get the same tool, or very nearly the same, for far less money out of China. It's a deal that you can't pass up. And yet, maybe there are adverse consequences of pursuing this incredible efficiency and lower prices and lower prices and lower prices. Inevitably, the lower prices mean that the people in this country don't have the money to buy anything. That's a strange part of this. You don't just get a lower price. You get less employment. You get lower wages. And then we don't have the money to buy even the cheap goods coming from China. Well, maybe. We'll watch and see how it unfolds, but that's at least a line of conjecture that's kind of intriguing to me, at least.
And here's the real reason. The world's billionaires are now worth $8 trillion, greater than the GDPs of Germany and France combined. This is according to the latest Who Run Global Rich list published by the China-based Who Run report. There are now 2,257 billionaires in the world. That's up 3% from last year. Their combined fortunes jumped 16% over 2016 to the equivalent of 11% of the world's annual GDP. Their wealth was also larger than every country's individual GDP other than the U.S. and China. Billionaires are concentrating wealth as a...
How many of them are there?
Well, they say in the beginning 2,257, but the number of billionaires has exploded over the past 5 years, rocketing 55% higher, because much of the world's wealth is hidden or difficult to find. The actual number of billionaires may be closer to 5,000. Some billionaires go to extraordinary lengths to conceal their wealth. For the most part, it is that they are discreet and prefer operating under the radar. Well, how are they given the opportunity to operate under the radar when if we operate under the radar, we get thrown in jail or fined? But, I mean, that's a big discrepancy, 2,200 versus 5,000.
I believe there's something like 3,000 counties in the United States. I don't know if that's true or false, but it seems that I heard that. Maybe that's a reliable number. We are toying with the idea that the number of billionaires in the world corresponds roughly to the number of counties in the United States of America. I don't know that that's meaningful one way or another, but it strikes me as one billionaire per county.
Hmm.
Who's your local billionaire, Melody?
Well, it's not me.
Not you.
Not yet. Working on it. Not yet.
Got an article here from Breitbart talking about the Republicans' new insurance program to replace Obamacare, or at least try to replace it. The headline is Paul Ryan replaces Obamacare's insurance penalties with even larger penalties. Now, this is annoying. Paul Ryan's Obamacare Lite plan will replace the individual mandate penalty with a premium surcharge for failing to maintain health insurance coverage for more than 63 days. Individuals without insurance face a 30% surcharge on their monthly premium. The penalty will fill the coffers of the insurance companies instead of the government. I don't know. So the penalty goes to the insurance companies rather than the government. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is that cause for celebration or cause to suspect a fix? Obamacare imposes penalties for those who go without insurance for more than 3 months. The new one's going to do 63 days. The IRS imposes penalties based on income and the length at which an individual, length of time at which an individual went without insurance. That's Obamacare. Health insurance premiums adjust based on age, meaning that Ryan's, the Republicans' health penalties, would be cheaper for younger Americans and more expensive for older Americans. Now, that's the big problem with Obamacare. The young people just don't want any part of it. And they don't think they're going to get anything out of it. And they don't see the point to supporting the elderly. The elderly should be taking care of themselves. They should have worked on it in their life and not sat back and said, we'll leave it for the kids and the grandkids to pay our way. And I can see where the young people have a point. Right? And so the Republicans are trying to create a new Obamacare Lite program that is less offensive to the youth of America, to the millennials and whatever, and hopefully they will be more likely to participate. And they're putting in a bigger penalty in case the millennials are not lured by the possibility, you know, by lower premium charges and whatever. And just in case they're not, we're going to slap them around with a big time penalty. What do you think about that, Melody? We're having a new insurance program that is supposedly going to get us away from Obamacare, but will subject us to more penalties if we don't want to participate. Does that sound like Republicans working for freedom? What have we really got here?
You know, I don't know what we have. I think it was way beyond the time limit to actually repeal Obamacare. And I mean, that's all you hear. That was a slogan. Everybody liked it. People got elected on it. But so many years after the fact, I don't think you can actually repeal it.
I think you
can change it. Now, you can change it in the various positions and so forth. I don't know. It depends. Well, it seems like the little changes that they're making isn't enough to repeal it.
Nice.
The only way they're going to repeal it is if they go to a one-payer system and create a program that people can get on. I mean, because that's the only true way they'll be able to repeal it. They can change it. They can make adjustments. They can, you know, sell it state lines. Maybe they'll convert this to, I don't know. But it doesn't seem like, and everybody is forgetting that it's the premiums that are ticking people off.
Yeah, I understand.
When your premiums go up 60% in a year, that's the problem.
That's part of the problem. Part of the problem is that there's a lot of people who don't think they should have to pay for their own health insurance. They think it should be subsidized, and maybe that's the foundation for the trouble we're dealing with.
The reason they think it needs to be subsidized is because they can't afford the high premiums.
I understand. So maybe we need to cut price of health care down. I mean, that's one of the problems, perhaps. I'm going to take a break. Be back in a couple minutes. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I didn't know if we were finishing up on the healthcare or
go
not.
Ahead if you want. Go ahead.
No, that's just my view. I don't think they can repeal it. It's too far ingrained in our system. The problem is people are, you know, don't like the 60% increases on their premiums. People don't like the high deductibles. Well, if you lower those deductibles, guess what's going higher? Your premium. Oh, yeah. And I told Al during the break, people want their cake and eat it too. It's not going to happen. So it's, you know, the issue, the problem of the healthcare industry, this is just another Band-Aid. And God bless them.
Yeah, I agree with that. They won't really repeal Obamacare.
No, they can't.
Until there is a financial crisis where we go so broke that something's got to be something. Some programs have to be terminated. That's all. The government won't be able to afford them. Under those circumstances, they may be able to get away with completely terminating something like Obamacare. But Obamacare is at least the heir, not necessarily an example, but an heir to the entitlement mentality and the idea that government can promise you things that government can't pay for, that you don't want to pay for right now, and leave the bill for your children and your grandchildren. Government's been getting away with that for a long time. That's what the nature of the national debt is. We have $20 trillion in national debt. Well, who's going to pay that? Well, not the people who got the benefit of the $20 trillion. The idea was we will borrow the money and we'll leave the bill for the kids. I think that mentality all by itself is destructive, and we are going to get, and I think we're going to face that here in the near future. The kids won't be able to pay the bills. That's all. It's very simple. We've left them more bills than they can expect to pay.
They don't want to.
Well, I know they don't want to. Of course they don't want to, and why should they? The adults don't want to pay for it. They said, leave the bill for the kids. I don't want to pay for it.
Give the bill to the kids.
And the kids don't leave it to me. I don't want to pay for it. And we're going to have a situation where the bills aren't going to get paid. The bonds aren't going to be redeemed. The debts will be defaulted on. Right, and then we're going to get to we will fall back into a world where if you want health care, you will have to pay for your own, or you will have to learn how to take care of yourself and perhaps be smart enough not to waste your money on junk food and cigarettes and alcohol and illegal drugs. You're going to have to become, all of us are going to have to become more responsible. And if a politician comes up and says, I'm going to give you a free lunch, you need to throw them out. You need to get the tar and the feathers. Get the rail.
Then again, I can,
right?
I
make
truly,
them understand we're I not truly, buying the nonsense anymore.
I truly can see where healthcare goes. You know, when you talk about, you can't buy your Twinkies, your Coke, and stuff like that, I truly do see more of a government intrusion into people's lives. Because if they're going to be controlling the healthcare, they're going to be controlling the people.
Oh,
that was my biggest problem with Obamacare. The problem was I was forced. I was told by the government that I had to have insurance. It was a control thing. I was losing a liberty or freedom. I was losing, and
a right of choice.
I had no choice. And that is what, I mean, we all know the healthcare system is broken. But again, we can't fix any of these programs. We can't fix any of the problems, we can address them, we can put band-aids on them and so forth, and it can look rosy and we can talk like it's rosy and everything. But until our monetary policy is fixed, nothing else will be fixed.
Well, I agree. It's a monetary policy in this business about going deeper into debt. When we talk about monetary policy, what's the fundamental problem?
We couldn't go deeper into debt if that was addressed. So, if our
currency... But we have to go deeper into debt, in my opinion, because we have a debt-based monetary system. That's one of the fundamental deals. If we're going to keep a debt-based monetary system, we have to go deeper into debt. We just about can't.
We have to go back to real money.
I know.
And they will have to default.
I know.
We have to go back to real money.
And how do we get there painlessly?
Because that's what controls their ability to get us into the position that we're in. You know, Arizona State, they passed a bill to treat gold as money. I guess it was passed, I thought it was just passed yesterday.
It's going to last a little while.
I thought they were talking about it, but it was actually passed. But it was actually passed. And also removing the capital gains tax to treat gold as money. So it's coming. And so that's what they have to do, because it's just going to be status quo until they do.
Well, they're going to try to maintain that until the stuff hits the fan, and then everybody's going to scream that Congress do something, and that will perhaps justify Congress doing something that they know won't be all that popular. But they're not going to do what's necessary, so long as what's necessary is unpopular. They are ruled by politics rather than really truly responsible behavior.
I saw big headlines today. U.S. debt decreased by more than $60 billion since January.
By $60 billion, huh?
It's a whole $60 billion.
Yeah, right.
You know, debts fluctuate. It depends on the revenues. It all fluctuates. And so, you know, yeah. Hey, if you did $68 billion a month for the next 24 months, then I'd say, yeah, that's good. We might get down to, you know, even if we got back to 10.
But even if we did $60 billion, it would have to be, what's that translate into, 15 years at $60 billion a month? To get rid of $1 trillion out of the $20 trillion that we owe right now in the national debt? I think that's the way it would work out. What did you say, $60 billion per month? That's $720 billion per year.
Yeah.
It'd take a year and a half. Take a year and a half to knock off $1 trillion. Out of the national debt, and we've got, it would take 30 years at that rate to knock off the national debt.
But that's not including, we're not including our annual budgets.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
We're not including, you know.
It can't be done.
It can't be done. But
no, it can't be done. I mean, you can look at it and you can calculate, well, this is only going to take so many years. Yeah, but during those so many years, you're not going to be able to produce, you know, benefits and entitlements and the rest of that sort of thing. People are going to be burning down parts of your cities to get some of their benefits and entitlements reinstated.
It's a feel-good headline. It was a feel-good headline.
Well, it's not just even a... Yeah, I guess it's a feel-good headline, but it's a deceptive headline. It's offering you a certain amount of hope in these circumstances that somehow we can get this resolved. And I'm unable to understand that. Now, it might be true that there is a way out of this, but I can't see it. I look at it and I say, the only way we're going to get out of this is through a great deal of financial and economic pain. And we're going to knock everybody back down to square one. Well, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people are going to get knocked down to square one, and we're going to start rebuilding the country from, you know, zero, essentially. But I don't see a way of escaping the problems we're facing that is painless. We're not going to outsmart this problem. We've been stupid for a long time, and we have operated on the basis that we could just pass these bills on and on and on and give them to the kids and the grandkids and whatever, and they'd pay them. good old kids, they'll pay for it. You know, it's like teachers. The teachers' unions are going broke. We've talked about this on the program before, but it's just a fantastic irony for me. It's a fantastic evidence of what goes around comes around. You know, the schools have done a terrible job of educating American children. We've gone from number one in the world in my lifetime to number 17, and maybe we're below number 17 now on a national basis. And we can, and all we do is we need to pay teachers more money and thank a teacher. Teachers and the education system have done a terrible job. But there's a kind of there's a sort of vengeance in this, a kind of consequence that really it's delightful to me. There is moral consequence. It's these kids. But the teachers educated and did a poor job. They did a poor job of educating the kids, and now the kids are going to be the ones who are responsible for coming up with the money to fund the teachers' pensions. And they won't be able to do it. With the poor education they've received, they're not going to be able to make enough money to pay high enough taxes to fund the teachers' pensions. And therefore, there's a lesson here for all of us. You know, if you want other people to take care of your debts at some point in the future, you need to take care of those other people now. You can't just say, well, you know, tech with them. I want mine and tech with them. There's an obligation here where you must do a good job for the people you're responsible for taking care of. Teachers haven't done it. Now the people that they didn't educate are the ones who are going to supposedly pay the teachers' pensions, and they won't make enough money to do it. Oh, to me, good. Good. Good, good. I like that. I like seeing a little bit of justice in this world. All right? And that's what we're going to kind of see. It's not just a matter of economics in the sense of mathematics and formulas and one thing and another like that. We need to tweak the interest rate 0.1% higher on Tuesdays or something. It's not about mathematics. In the end of this thing, this is about morality. This is about being personally responsible. And we've been encouraged to believe we didn't have to be personally responsible, and we are going to learn. One of the fundamental themes of this program is that each of us has to be personally responsible. And the reason I say that is because we've told you for a number of years that ultimately we think your retirement, it's going to be up to you. If you want a retirement you can count on, all right? You're going to have to take responsibility for it. If you're going to trust in the government, Social Security, pension funds, rest, this sort of thing, everything is suggesting that is unwise. You want a pension? Get one and take care of it yourself. Don't want to take care of it yourself? Watch and see. Watch and see. You're going to learn. And what the lesson will be, you must be responsible. I must be responsible. Melody must be responsible. All right, and if some government guy from the government says I'm here to help you, just throw him out the door. He's lying. He's not here to help you. He's here to help himself. They're not here to help you. We have to regain that idea where, okay, I'll take care of myself. We have to regain that idea. Yes, I can function independently in this world, and I can take care of myself. Now, I know that there's problems, and I know we want to provide a safety net for some people, but we cannot provide a culture where people are allowed to just stay essentially on welfare for the rest of their lives. One way or another, that's got to be restricted, and we've got to be minimized, and people have to look. If you want to eat, better get yourself a job. Want a pension? Better start saving your own money, point one, and point two, better save it in a form, in a media that can resist the ravages of government and resist the ravages of inflation and function in a real world. Not like fiat currency. I don't believe fiat currency will provide an adequate retirement. I don't believe it'll provide adequate savings. I don't think it even provides really a good basis for work and employment. Do you want to retire well? Then you need to start getting paid, all right, for your work. And people say, well, I get paid. No, you don't. Are you taking a piece of paper in return for your work? You're not being paid. You're getting a promise to pay. Right? A payment is something tangible. A piece of paper is not tangible. I mean, it's physical, yes, it's a physical piece of paper, but it has no tangible value. Right? You want to do well, you're going to have to start being paid. And you're going to have to learn the difference between a payment and a promise to pay. And I'm telling you, everything that you get on paper is nothing but a promise to pay. Not a payment until you get something tangible. And it's one of the reasons why we sit here and advocate by get yourself some gold, get yourself some silver. You know? World is, we're going to get our lesson. Whether we like it or not, we are going back to school, and we're going to get a lesson there that is going to be breathtaking. It's going to be a lesson that will make people shake their heads in disbelief, and they say, my God, why didn't I study when I was back in school? Why did they do such a poor job of teaching me? Why do I have to learn these lessons later on in life? And you do. Because you didn't learn them earlier in life, and people misled you. Now you got to lead yourself. You got to take care of yourself. So, did you understand that, Melody? Are you prepared to take personal responsibility?
Well, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, Al. But I just want to remind the listeners: we moved the clock ahead 1 hour this weekend for daylight savings time. And it's interesting that Duke Energy released a study saying that it has adverse health effects. So that are a side effect of using 0.5% less energy per day as a result of gaining an hour of sunlight. Well, Duke Energy, I would think sunlight would be more would be healthier for you than the power that they provide. But anyway, don't forget to put your clocks forward for those of you that are affected by that.
We will be back at whatever time it is, but we'll be back sometime on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.